This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am so happy that I have in the studio with me today Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, because it is funny, in the past month or so, I have been getting so many emails from all of you about a lawsuit that is very intriguing. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
It's so good to have you here. As I mentioned, and I sent you an email about it, I was getting all these. I had not heard about this lawsuit, and then I started getting emails from people. Well, did you hear about this lawsuit? This lady is taking a word. She's taking a word, and she's telling everyone they can't use this word. And so I looked into it, and I found that indeed she... an author named Felina Hopkins was involved in trying to take one word just for her own self.
That's right. You're allowed to under trademark law. It's perfectly legal.
Okay. So, but then she sent out a very sort of scary, very official looking letter to authors who had that word in the title of their books.
Yeah, your old cease and desist letter.
That's right. And she really told him to cease and desist, because she wrote, "My attorney at Morris Yarn Entertainment Law has advised me that if I sue you, I will win all the monies you have earned on this title, plus lawyer's fee will be paid by you as well." And so
Scary.
Yeah, it sounds really scary. Did this work?
So you can trademark words for books, not when they're a single title, but when they're in a series. So for instance, the word Time, you wouldn't want to take that out of the English language, but that magazine is the only magazine that can use the word Time for a news magazine. So it's perfectly permissible under trademark law to have a word and have it adopted by a single person or company, and they are the only ones that can use it for a series of either books, magazines, any kind of publications. It's totally permissible under trademark law.
Okay, so what happened with this lawsuit? What was she trying to do? She wanted the word cocky.
Right, so she has a series of books that incorporate the word cocky. So when people that like her books look for her books, they know that the next title will have the word cocky in it.
And she's concerned that is based on the characters in her book. It's about two brothers named
The Cocker Brothers. Right.
And so that's where she has
a play on there.
Exactly.
Right. So she's created a series of books incorporating the word cocky, which her readers have come to understand is her series. And so she's concerned that if others come out using cocky in the title, that there's going to be confusion. And she said so, that some of the readers will think that they're the same author when they're not. And she's entitled to legitimately stop others from using that. The recent ruling that came down denied her an injunction. Okay, that doesn't mean she's lost the case. That just means the judge says that in this lawsuit, there's money available for you. You can only get an injunction if there's no money available. In other words, there's no remedy other than money. And in this case, I believe the judge said that if you win, you'll get money. So we don't need an injunction.
Okay, and now this is filed up in New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
The hotbed of these kinds of cases, okay. The Second District. Yeah.
Okay, so... So is she right in her letter that people have to take the word cocky out of their title?
If she prevails, yes. And so she has the legal right to do that. And the law also provides that if she wins, then the judge can tell the others not to use cocky. She can get her attorney's fees back. She can get damages if she can prove them, money damages. She can even get enhanced damages if she proves that the infringement was willful or...
Okay, but now if those books came out before her books, then...
If they preceded her, then they have a right. They're grandfathered in, so to speak.
So she can't sue them?
If books came out before hers, they can probably continue to sell those, yes.
Okay.
It's the ones that come after.
So she can protect this word?
She can, absolutely.
Whoa. Okay. So this is sort of... Now, we're going to have authors.
It seems odd, but that's the way our laws work.
And so, really, now, for example, like Harry Potter. Harry Potter is a protected...
Harry Potter's a name, right, of a made-up person, but you can't write books called Harry Potter. Those words are gone as for the purposes of titles of books or movies because a single person owns that. You can't take it.
You can't take it.
You can't take it.
And you can't even write a book like Why I Love Harry Potter.
Well, that's that could be a problem. Depends on why you're writing it. There's an exception under the copyright law. That allows you to publish things if it's for the purposes of comment or criticism.
And so in that case you could, but you couldn't write anything, a story.
Couldn't be a novel or anything like that. Or anything similar like that. It would have to be some kind of either critique or some kind of educational material or something that would come under the exception.
Wow. You know, that I'm trying to think of people who will like want to take advantage of this. Really, they could tie up words.
You could, but you have to have it legitimately used in your business. You just can't tie it up for the purposes of tying it up. In this case, the author actually has a series of books incorporated the word cocky, and that word has come to be associated with her and her series.
And her series. Mm-hmm. So now, a word like Apple has Apple, but that's protected.
That's protected for computers.
For computers.
Mm-hmm. If you want to start the grapefruit, go ahead, but you can't use Apple.
You can't use Apple. Okay, so
that's what our policy has decided in the United States, that we protect business folks and we protect authors and we protect people with intellectual property. If they develop something under a particular type of intellectual property, a copyright or a trademark or a patent, then they're entitled exclusively to the use.
Wow. Okay, so I think now we're going to have authors out there trying to think how they can... How do they do... Now, she actually filed a trademark... On the specific word.
She did.
Right. I understand she also did a trademark on the style of the
You could do that too.
You could do that too. But that's a separate kind of thing.
It's one and the same,
sort
really.
Sort of like an artwork.
For example, Coca-Cola is a trademark, right? But also the way they have it spelled on the bottle and that cursive really is protectable. So, yes, you can protect the font and the style and the color and all that kind of stuff. But it's really the words because when the consumer hears cocky, they associate that with her series of novels.
Okay, well, she's done a great, I suppose, just from the publicity point of view, nobody had ever heard about her. I know, you know, I read so many books, and I know so many authors, and I had never heard of this woman.
And once you have the trademark registration, then you can file that with Amazon through their intellectual property dispute forum. And if somebody else is using your trademark and you show Amazon you've got that registered, then boom, they come down. Oh. Amazon takes them off.
It's a little bit scary because, I mean, somebody who's just, I don't know, out to get people, I mean, can take a very big word like spy, and from henceforward, you won't be able to use that. I mean,
if you properly develop it and trademark it and the consumer believes that it is associated with you and your work, then yes, you can do that. You can take the word.
And you would have the word spy, and nobody could. I mean, that would be mind-boggling, because you know how many titles there are. Now, I'll tell you one thing. I wish I had taken the word girl, because I'm like up to my ears in books. People send me books, and girl is in the title, because we had girl gone, girl this, girl that. It's like every time. You know, like every fifth book I get is girl something. And I'm so tired of that. I want somebody, you know, there was a long period of time when women weren't supposed to be called girls. You know, we said, we don't want to be called girls. Yeah. And then suddenly in the past 3 years, it has been, ever since Girl Gone, I think, was just one girl book after another. So if you do a search, you get like a zillion girl books. And I'm thinking, oh, all right, let's get over it. Let's say women already or something, you know, because I can't stand it anymore. I get confused. You know, as I said, I read a lot and I have all these girl books. Now, I realized that what I had to do is I'm not going to do one shelf and put all the girl books on that shelf because I can fill it up.
Now, the use of the word girl in the title has become so prolific that no one can claim exclusive use. So that word is gone for the purposes of trademarking.
But if you can think of a new word... Or a word that people might want to use, and then
then you can trademark it. Yeah, and you can adopt that and be the only person who uses it.
And then if somebody came along and wanted to use it because they really, really liked it,
they had to pay you money.
They had to pay
your permission.
You know. Now, this is going to keep a lot of people awake at night. We're all going to be thinking, is there a word we can develop?
But you can't do it in and of itself. It can't be in a vacuum. It has to be associated with the product.
And so that she had these books, I don't even know how many. I have never read her books. I don't know, but it's. I thought it was very strange and certainly...
Seems counterintuitive, but there's a reason for it, and it's really a consumer protection statute.
Uh-huh.
And if the consumer comes to believe that that word is associated with that product or service, then that person's entitled to have the exclusive use.
Wow. Okay. I think a lot of my listeners weren't sure, didn't know what, you know, and some of them, of course, are thinking that they might have a word in their title, but as you said, it's grandfathered in, and... Nobody can come after them now.
Right. If that book is 30 years old and it's been on the shelves, you can't stop it now.
You can't stop it now. Okay. And so I think some of the people I think who got her letter had their books had been out.
And then they have to show is that they preceded her and then they're off the hook.
So they don't have to worry about it.
Correct.
Okay. Well, it's another, writers have so many things to think about. It's unbelievable. When you go to in the summer, there are a lot of book fairs, a lot of places where there are big shows and books. And when you go to them, authors are always approached about their books, and often they're approached about licensing. Like if they have a character or if they have... something, you know, that might be licensable, they are approached at these events by people who say, oh, I would like to license your book. I like that, that character.
And it's excellent income stream.
It is.
Licensing, yes.
But I want to tell everybody to please do not sign anything without it going through a lawyer, because I did talk to somebody who went to a big book fair, one of the biggest in Miami last year. And there was a person going around saying, if you are ready today to sign this license agreement, I will, work on it. In this case, it would have been stuffed animals based on the story. And I'll take it to China and I'll have them made up for you.
Right.
But that's not a good idea.
You got to do your homework.
Yeah.
Make sure that, in fact, you're required to have a license, or should you pay, and how much.
Uh-huh.
So there's some due diligence that has to be done, and lawyer will do that for
now,
you.
Now, as you said, in this case with the word cocky, she did a trademark.
She did. Registered it.
Registered. So that's not a copyright. That's separate.
Trademark. Right.
Trademark is different.
It's a brand name.
And then she also trademarked her actual design, which we understand because everybody has a logo and they trademark it. It belongs to them. So if you have characters in a book that are,
characters are different than
characters
the title.
Are different.
Yeah, characters in books are not given a great deal of protection under copyright law. They can, but you really have to develop them in a very special way. And then there's a question of how they are licensed. For instance, Captain Crunch, right, is a character on a cereal box, right? So is that character protectable, and in what way? And that area of the law is extremely complex.
And characters like in Scooby-Doo, all of those characters are protected.
Right. And Disney's done a wonderful job at developing and protecting characters.
Oh, they protect everything.
They protect everything. And they're really, really good at it. And they don't want anybody just coming along making Mickey Mouse dolls or Mickey Mouse hats. Even though Mickey Mouse originally was a character in a cartoon, now it's morphed into a product line of cups and hats and stuffed toys and everything. So the question is, are they exclusively entitled to that character? And the answer is yes.
Okay. Well, this is, one of the things that, I tell people all the time, that you really have to... have many hats when you're a lawyer, when you're a writer, because you have to have that lawyer's mind. You have to be able to know when you have to be, in touch with a lawyer to make sure that that what you're doing is right, which we're going to talk about this in a minute, because I got a message from someone who sent us a question about 6 months ago, and now she's back at it, and she wants to know. Okay, this is about memoirs.
Memoirs.
Memoirs are a sticky area.
Yes, they are.
Because it is what you remember, and sometimes you might not remember correctly, or sometimes you might embellish.
And there's countervailing public policy reasons for allowing people to write truthful memoirs, but at the same time protecting a person's privacy.
And this is a difficulty, and there have been many lawsuits about this, and where you might not even identify in your book a character by name. You mm-hmm. just might be talking, like, in general about an uncle who was this.
And you are not entitled to the unfettered right to the truth all the time, because sometimes the truth could hurt somebody.
Yes. And, for example, if and one of the memoirs that I know that I had the author in here, as a matter of fact, and she wrote a memoir. And now she wrote about, when I thought of the word uncle, about an uncle who abused her. And now she wrote about it in her book very clearly, but she never mentioned his name. Now, he never, up to that point, when the book came out, he had not sued her. But it's a tricky situation.
It's a very tricky situation, and there's kind of a two-level analysis. A, did you use the person's name outright so everybody in the world knows exactly who you're talking about? Or did you give the person a pseudonym and you mentioned some facts which inner circle would know who you're talking about? So there's two levels of protection there. If you use the person's name outright so that everybody knows it, then there's a real concern that you might be invading the person's privacy. On the one hand, we have the constitutional principle of freedom of information, freedom of speech. And on the other hand, we have the statutory principle of a right to privacy. And if a person comes to know you, for example, and knows some of your personal things about you, maybe that you want to keep private, and we're all entitled to our privacy. That's the kind of culture, and that's the kind of government, and that's the kind of life we've designed in the United States. And you don't want those publicly disclosed. You have a right to keep those secret. And so your statutory right of privacy will supersede the person's constitutional right to freedom of information and public disclosure. And so the question is, when those two intersect, where is the choice, which side do you fall on? And what the government has said is whether or not there's a legitimate public concern, okay? And legitimate public concern would mean that it would be an issue that's, you know, current and relevant in the public right now. For instance, right now probably the most relevant subject we have is the misogyny and the discrimination of men against women of power, particularly in the movie industry, right? That's very, very, very popular right now, very important. And so in that case, a woman would be allowed probably a great deal more latitude to discuss all of the facts that happened.
Memoir, and I'm sure all of them, or most of them, are going to write a memoir and make
right. Yeah. Disclosing exactly what happened in brutal detail. And so the other person would probably say, "Well, you're invading my privacy." And yes, that's true. We're invading your privacy, but we're entitled to do it because there's a legitimate public concern. In other words, the public has the right to discuss this issue because this is something we're trying to fix. Okay, and that's the way the court's going to make. That's the decision-making process the court will use.
Okay, well, which brings me back to my listener, who it was about 6 or 7 months ago. So she explained to me that she had written a memoir, and she had finished it at that point, and it is about her relationship with a famous person who actually lives in our area. Okay, and then she realized, well, I think she wrote it as a cathartic thing. She needed to get it down on paper and, you know, have it, and then looking at it and, you know, perhaps having some people read it, they said,
reason for it?
Yeah,
right?
And we really don't know if you want to do this. And so then she went and she spent another 3 months and she called in. We had talked about, you know, the dangers of you know, mentioning real people if you can't prove things and stuff like that. So she wrote it, she changed it, she went and changed it as a turned it into a book. Fiction,
okay.
Did it like a first person with different names, and some things changed, but because of the type of events that this famous person is involved in, there's a limit to how much
the inner circle or some folks may know who you're talking about, even though you changed the name.
So then,
that's still an invasion of privacy.
That's what I more or less said to her. I'm not, you know, I said I'm not a lawyer. I call Bill Larson. Now here's the problem. She wants to write, and why? She hasn't called you, by the way. Because she wants to remain anonymous completely. I mean, she wants to remain anonymous to the agents she sends it into. I explained to her.
So she wants to protect her privacy.
I said, you want to protect. I didn't say, well, you want to protect your privacy. But essentially, that's it.
Exactly.
And
correct.
I said, you know, people do submit to agents that. They want to use a nom de plume. They want to use some other name. And
Anonymous.
Yeah,
very typical.
Felina Hopkins has, I think, a couple of names that she uses.
Particularly if you're writing about subject matter, which is very sensitive.
Yeah. Okay. But at some point, you have to tell them your real name, because otherwise they can't give you a check, right?
you can work that out.
Well, you know. But so the point is, if she wants to remain completely anonymous, well, I mean,
it still doesn't
she?
Get you around the law
it
of invading
doesn't get
someone's
you,
privacy.
Exactly.
What I mean, this is what the court said. The critical issue is whether the personal information that you want to disclose in your book under your First Amendment right is for relevance of issues of legitimate public concern or is merely morbid and sensational plying into the private life of another's for your own sake. Big words there from the court, okay? So there's an intent behind it. There's a reason behind it, okay? A lot of factors. Is there a public concern? Is this just for sheer profits, okay? Is there a reason? Is there a legitimate public concern, I mean, a debate going on in society where this is something that the First Amendment is now going to protect because it's an important issue? Or, again, is it just sensational plying into somebody's private life for money?
Yeah. This is exactly the problem with this woman's book. I'm uneasy about what she's described to me in confidence, and I think it would be an interesting story.
Well, you start with the default setting is the other person's going to be upset.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now the question is, do they have a legal right to stop it, and whether or not you've fallen into the privacy laws and you've violated those, or whether you're allowed to. Under the First Amendment for free speech is a question of degree.
And I have told her, now, she's now thinking of writing it as in third person, but she doesn't want to tell, for example, the agent that this is actually her true story. She doesn't want,
it's the mention of the facts in the other person
to the
that
publisher.
Sells the books.
Wouldn't it be deceptive if you didn't tell, in her case, I mean, it really scares me that she's going to try to get an agent who might pick up the book. Actually, I read part of it. She's a good writer, darn good writer. So if they picked it up thinking that it's not her personal story, but a real novel, a real, you know, made up fictional thing, and are they responsible if this person sues? Because this person's famous and he could sue like, woo, I mean, he'd have all the money in the world to sue.
Yeah, and so typically the publisher will get an indemnification from the author, where the author has to make certain representations. This is not about a real person. This is all made up. It's not going to injure anybody. It's not libelous. If it comes to be shown that it is an invasion of privacy, then the author is going to be on the hook probably for all the damages and attorney's fees under what we call indemnification.
And not the agent, not the publicist, not all of these people would
not
be.
Not unless the publicist knew or had reason to know. But usually they'll protect themselves. They're smart enough to know that if a book is salacious in any way or something, that there's a risk of lawsuits.
Exactly. And they probably have insurance, but you never want to get into that thing. And I told her, I don't think. Well, first of all, I don't think one should ever lie. Particularly, one should never lie on legal documents. It's crazy. You always get caught. I mean, don't do it. I mean, right?
There's no such thing as secrets anymore.
No.
So if you lie, you're going to get caught.
You're going to get caught.
That's the default setting.
And so it doesn't make sense. And you know, it's so
you have to make a choice.
Yeah.
You know, is this going to be a work which is based on the truth, and we're going to invade somebody's privacy to a certain degree and see if we can, it's okay, whether the court says it's not such an invasion that it's illegal, or are we going to completely change all the names and so everybody's safe?
Okay. Well, one more question before you leave. I've been getting this, and we talked about it before. A number of, well, a lot of writers have been getting emails from people offering to turn their books into film and offering all sorts of things, from doing treatments to doing screenplays to introducing them to people in Hollywood. And in all cases, the people who are sending these emails always want releases. They want the full, you know, your full manuscript, and they want you to sign a release. And
well, first, you want to be very careful about any unsolicited offers that you're getting off the internet, or you know, if somebody's coming to you just out of the blue, I would be very suspicious in the first instance. Before, of course, you started speaking with those people, I would vet them out. Okay, so you can go on the internet, or you can hire folks to vet them out to see if they're for real. And if they are for real, then you probably talk to them. But in many cases, there's just so many folks out there on the internet
in
that are looking
cases,
to take advantage, that you need to be very, very careful. Yeah.
And never sign anything without a lawyer, and never, ever sign a release that they send you. Now, if they send you a sort of a questioning kind of release in the body of an email, if they say, now, do you agree that if we do this for you, you'll be happy?
That could create a contract.
That creates a contract.
The back and
right
forth
there.
Of emails can create a contract.
That's what I explained to one of my listeners. She said, well, it's not an actual form. They didn't send me a PDF. Mm-hmm. So she thought if she had a PDF, she'd go to a lawyer and show it. She said, no, it's just in the email, they say, you know, if I do this and for, you know, $250, you know, they will start the process. They will start the process of getting me introduced into Hollywood. And do you agree? And I think simply by the words, do you agree, maybe that is enough.
You could be entering into a contract that you're not.
Exactly. And I said to her, don't respond. Don't.
One of the things she could do is just put a great big, bold, 16-font statement across the top. This is not an agreement. We are not contracting, and there is no contract between us, and until all parties have executed a formal agreement. Put that in a great big, bold sentence.
Okay. Well, that is Bill Larson's
tip
of the day. Exactly. Okay, Bill, thank you so much for coming
pleasure.
In. It was great talking to you. And we learned a lot today. Boy, oh boy. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Great to see you. Bye-bye now. Okay. Woo.
Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, Jennifer Emmett, who is the Senior Vice President of Content in the Kids and Family Division of National Geographic. And I want to thank National Geographic so much for sending me the newest version of their Kids Almanac for 2019. It is super cool. And I am so happy to have you on the program, Jennifer.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, wow. Do you have fun or what? This is this is such a wonderful job to have.
We have a lot of fun.
it's amazing. You've done a beautiful, well, as always, Nat Geo books are just the best. And they make wonderful gifts. Now, of course, this is a kid's version, but every adult needs to have this. As a matter of fact, you know, this is the kind of book that you just want to have right there on your coffee table. When they talk about a coffee table book, you want it there because you're watching television, they mention something, and boy, you can grab this book and look into it.
It is great. And Almanac has a lot of reference content in it, so it's perfect for the family bookshelf all year round. But it also has so much just fun browsable information. It's like a portal on the world. And it has 500 pictures. And so having it out on your coffee table during the summer is great because if kids get bored, there's something to do. It's got a fun and game section. It's immediately something that kids can just kind of dive into and lose themselves. It sparks their curiosity and really keeps their minds engaged.
Or if husbands get bored or they have too many terrible commercials and you can just mute it and pick up this book and read because it just fills your mind with so many interesting things and I love it. And I was trying to think where to start, but since you graduated from the University of Michigan, and I played on the there at football games, you know, I play the flute in the marching band. So I thought we would start with Wolverines. Tell us a little bit. Most people don't know, except if you lived in Michigan, what a Wolverine is.
Yeah, well, Wolverines are small, very fierce animals, and they are not to be messed with, for sure. There are other animals out there that are also particularly fierce. And one of the conservation stories that I love from the book is about the Tasmanian devil. So think, you know, Wolverine-like, but living in Tasmania, you know, near Australia, far corner of the world. And the Tasmanian devil, they're endangered marsupials. They're really on the brink of extinction, mostly due to a contagious cancer that was discovered in 1996. But scientists are working hard to have these animals make a comeback. And there's been a Tasmanian devil baby boom in Tasmania, in Australia. So it is, it's a good time for Tasmanian devils. Which is a nice story because for a lot of animals, it's not as good a time. And they are facing a rougher road as part of the 2019 Almanac. This year, we're encouraging kids to do what they can do to help save lions because we just posed the question to kids, can you imagine a world without lions? And it's sad that we may have to imagine that because there are only about 20,000 left in the wild. So National Geographic is working with a wonderful explorer named Tandoe Mitwa. She lives in Africa. She tracks and observes lions to help boost their numbers in the wild. And she's giving kids a challenge for the Almanac to make a poster with a message about saving lions and to send that in to the National Geographic Kids website. And then they'll enter for a chance to win $500 and host a Lions Forever party for all their friends.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Nat Geo has always been at the forefront of trying to educate people as to the importance of animals and how we can make sure that they are, that they survive into the next generations, because it is such a tragedy when people don't understand how important it is for us to just step in there and help save the animals.
That's right. And National Geographic, we really believe that kids can make a difference. When they get curious, when they get impassioned, when they take action, there are things that they can do, and we think that will inspire the next generation of explorers and kids who are going to protect the planet.
It's so important. And this kind of book, because it is so colorful, and of course it is done in the traditional way of that Nat Geo is doing children's book. I love all these little blurbs, all the sections, breaking it down into sections so that kids can pick up the book and read it at any point and find something of interest and then go back again. And you always find something, you know, that you missed or that you want to reread again.
That's right. This year, I could not believe how cool this robot hotel in Japan is. It's this hotel that's operated completely by robots. I think we should go check it out. So you have to open your door with facial recognition instead of with a rune key, and they have robots who wash the windows and who vacuum the floors. In the lobby, in the tank, they have robot fish. And when you get there, there's a robot velociraptor, a dinosaur wearing a bellhop hat, and he greets you and checks you in.
Well, you know, of course, you get to work with all the photos that Nat Geo has, and they have millions of them. And so part of your job is selecting the ones that you want in the book?
Yeah, well, we have a fantastic team of photo editors. We're so lucky to work with some of the best photographers in the world. And our photo editors know the animals that kids will really respond to. So adults might appreciate a more distant landscape picture, you know, with an animal far away. But we know that kids love the immediacy, the action, and especially animals, and animals kind of coming at you, animals close up with eye contact, smiling.
Or sitting on your back.
Photo galleries.
I love the meerkat one.
What's that?
I love the meerkat.
Yeah. There's this great photo gallery of the 19 cutest animals of 2019, and there are some really fun ones in there. There's even a beluga whale who looks like he's just popping out of the water, smiling at you. You want to give him a little hug, but given that he lives in the Arctic and it's really cold, that might not be the best idea.
Well, there are so many. I love the section, the life in the past and the history, because I think when children see these photographs, they really will take an interest in learning more about the history of these places.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, no, we feature places like Machu Picchu and Atlantis and Stonehenge, and they're great stories. Some of them are mysteries, too, like the Curse of the Hope Diamond that was owned by Marie Antoinette. And her husband, King Louis XVI, they were both beheaded, and they believe, the legend has it, that there was a curse from the gods on this diamond ever since in the mid-1600s. It was stolen from a temple in India. Probably just superstition, but there are some crazy stories along with that Hope Diamond. Even the guy who delivered it to the Smithsonian when it found its current home had his leg crushed in a car accident.
So there's a lot of interesting things in this book. Now, one of you have now in this version of the Almanac are the quizzes, which I think are great.
Yeah, it's a chance for kids to test their knowledge and see if they can stump their parents. And there's a quiz at the end of each section. And we also encourage kids to go online to our website and find more fun quizzes and extend their knowledge. So you can stump your parents with facts like bees visit 5 million flowers just to make one jar of honey.
And also, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed, one of the sections I really enjoyed was the royal, and because it is a royal wedding weekend, the royally amazing castles.
Yes, absolutely. There's some beautiful pictures of castles there. Do you see some with Harry Potter connections or, of course, the famous Neuschwanstein Castle in Bavaria, which was the inspiration for Disneyland's Sleeping Beauty Castle. So there are some pretty incredible castles that are featured here.
Now, they didn't send you out to check them out, huh?
Unfortunately, no.
No, you should have said, I'm not sure about that castle. I really think I should go visit it to make sure that it's really a spooky spot, you know? Head for Count Dracula's castle. That would have been fun, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But hopefully kids will be inspired to get there someday. On their own, and we'll have to add that to our bucket list too, the castle tour.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the sections I enjoyed reading, because I had not thought of it, that in the history section where you have the Stone of Hope, the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., I thought that was a very important page, because I like that you put that quote in, one of my favorite quotes of that he something he said, and he said, "The time is always right to do what is right." And it's such a beautiful quote,
absolutely.
And it's such a beautiful section there that you did for Martin Luther King. I really like that.
Yeah, no, he's such an inspiration, and certainly many have found it. So there are 900 streets that are named after Dr. King in the United States, and he's the only non-president whose birthday is celebrated as a national holiday.
I think that's a great section. Now, of course, no Nat Geo book would be complete without maps, because that's what you do so well. And I love the section on maps.
Yes, it's really helpful to have a book in the house that has maps of the world, easy reference, every continent. And there's some tips for how kids can learn how to read maps, how they can navigate them. And I am someone who's worked at National Geographic for many years, and I can read a map. I'm not always the best at following the maps. I tend to get lost a lot, of a little navigationally challenged. So I was also excited to learn about this cool invention. They're shoes that sync up with your smartphone that give you directions. They vibrate left or right. So when you're walking around town and trying to find your way, your shoes can help you out.
I didn't know that. Is that cool?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So this was a big task for you and your team to put all of this together.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a big team who works on the Almanac. We do an edition every year, and it's about 30 people. We have writers, researchers, editors, photo editors, et cetera, et cetera. It's a great team effort, and we all love this book. It really captures a snapshot of the world for the year ahead, 2018 going into 2019, so you have it on your shelf all year long, and you can have so much to look forward to, things that are coming up in 2019. It's a big year. It's Scooby-Doo's birthday, 50 years, and it's the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's so, as I said, it's a delightful book, as always, and just one section after another, you can't go wrong. You know, just whether it's the green living things, I found that interesting, and of course the part about the fragile earth, which is so important that children understand what it means for us to protect the environment.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, kids really are, I think, the champions of the earth, and for them to understand that the trash that mounts up, you know, just doesn't go away. National Geographic is working on a big initiative around plastics, as are many others, and it takes a plastic bag 10 to 20 years to break break down in a landfill. Way too much plastic is getting into the ocean. Plastic fishing line takes 600 years to break down in a landfill. So if we work together and all do our part, and kids can often lead the way and reduce our plastic usage, our planet will be in much better shape in the years to come.
Well, I was impressed recently when I went to visit my son up at university, and all of his friends everyone, when we sat down to eat, none of the kids would take straws. And it was like second nature to me. Well, they put a straw there, so I'll use it. But, oh, no, the young people absolutely would not use straws. And I thought, well, you know, that's the first step. And that's come along because of the things that they've learned through books like this, of the importance of protecting the planet.
Absolutely. And I have in my office a bamboo straw that I use as a reusable straw. And it really can make a difference. If everybody gives up straws, that's a lot of plastic that we can be keeping out of the oceans.
Exactly. Well, when you see the mess that they're trying to clear up in the oceans, you really do appreciate the importance of just thinking about even little things like that.
Yeah, no, it's true. Lots of little steps strung together can make a big difference.
Well,
and it's just such a fascinating world we live in, and the information that you learn about the world, you know, inspires you through this book. Millions of years ago, Earth was covered with giant mushrooms that grew taller than a house. Planet's been around a long time, and it's gone through some very extraordinary phases, and we want it to be around for a lot longer to come.
Exactly. And straws don't grow. We don't need so many of them. So this book is really great. You know, this is a perfect job. Every year comes along and you have a new book to do, right?
That's right. Yes, updated every year, so it has the most current information and gives you everything you need to know about the year ahead, and every time we're putting in new amazing content for kids to marvel at, looking at culture through different superstitions, for example. Really fascinating to just see how different people think about their world through their culture. Some people believe that goats ward off evil, but only if you keep them really close. So you have to think about, do you want a goat in your bedroom?
That's true. Now, my grandmother had a goat that she kept very close to her. As a matter of fact, she was the only one who could get near that goat. So maybe she knew something.
She probably did.
Okay. Well, Jennifer, I want to thank you again for being on the program today. It's been a joy to talk to you. National Geographic Kids Almanac 2019 is just a fantastic book, and it's available wherever books are sold. And also, National Geographic website is amazing. And as you said, you have a lot more information for everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah, we encourage people to check it out. It's natgeokids.com. And then the almanac page is /almanac, the world's best-selling almanac for kids. So,
and it's cool. Beautiful. The photographs, as always, for a Nat Geo book are beautiful. I love, as I said, I love the quizzes, because I think everybody likes quizzes. It's, you know, it's always a fun way to reinforce what you've just learned. So again, I think you've done you and your team, because I know it is a big task. I want to thank you all for putting together a book that I think it is not, they say for kids, but we're all kids at heart, I guess. And every adult I know would just love this book too. So it makes a great gift. And if you know any kid who's, you know, the summer is a long time and they really need to be reading, and this is a book that I know all kids will pick up.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's great to keep kids reading every day. This one's super browsable right there, and perfect thing for the summer.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Jennifer, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Have a wonderful summer.
Okay, you too. And we'll talk to you next year, because you've got I'm sure you're already working on it.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. We didn't take a day off.
I didn't think so.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay. Ooh. All right. I like her. Now, I want to just remind everyone that you can go to Facebook and like me on Facebook. It's Radio Joy on Paper. And I have some new videos I'm putting up over the weekend. And I hope that you will have a look at them, including a few more of my calm videos, because I want people to calm down a little bit and read a good book instead of just obsessing on the news, because I think we're, as they did a survey, and we are all overloaded. So it's a time to take a moment of calm. And you can go to my website, radio-joy on paper, and I have a book bazaar there with a link to some of the books that I think you should read this summer, and also some books that you should get as Father's Day gifts, because it is just wonderful if you get a Father's Day gift that is something that a father will treasure and keep with them. When you write a note inside the book, it's something that they will treasure. So do think of that. And also, don't forget the MyPillow and use my promo code PATZI. That also makes a wonderful, wonderful Father's Day gift. And meanwhile, remember what I always say, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. And I've been listening to so many wonderful audible books lately, and I will be talking more about those next week, because it is a growing phenomenon that people are listening to audible books, and it's one way for you to get another stream of income for all of you authors out there. And I have a really great audible book next week. Dan Harris, the from ABC Good Morning America, is going to be on Tuesday, and we're going to be talking about his new book about meditation, and we will also be talking about the Audible version, which, as I said, it's a really, really great one. Again, a wonderful Father's Day book, and so that's by Dan Harris, and he will be on Tuesday. And what else? Oh, yeah, remember what we talked about the other day? Do look at readers, Writer's Digest, and they have a lot of contests opening up. And I suggest that you send your book out to contests, because you never know, you might win, or you, even if you don't win first prize, as long as you get noticed by an agent. And this is one way for you to really have something to write about in your query letter. And we're going to be talking a lot about query letters this summer. And I will put up some really great samples of wonderful query letters that have been successful. And that's the important thing. We want you to have a success in finding an agent. So I will be putting up those on my website. Again, go to my website, radio-joy on paper. Always check it out, and you can see who's coming up, what authors are going to be on. And that's all for today. And just have a wonderful weekend, and say something nice to somebody. And I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good to me. And bye-bye for now.